You have any questions? If you have any questions, could you please step up to the mic? Okay. All right, well, thank you. So next up, we have William White. He is the CTO, not chief scientist, for onboard security. And he will be talking on timing and side channel countermeasures for quantum safe cryptography. So please welcome William.
Okay, thanks very much, everyone. Good to be here. I'm not sure what I said, but good to see those of you who are left here. This presentation is on timing and side-channel countermeasures for quantum safe cryptography. And this isn't an original research presentation. This is more of a survey. So I'm the CTO of Onboard Security, which through a chain of acquisitions has ended up owning the Ncrew patents. I've been working on Ncrew cryptography off and on since 2003. Although we have an interest specifically in Ncrew, we're also interested in moving quantum safe cryptography forward in general. So the goal of this paper isn't so much to present new results, and it certainly won't contain anything that'll surprise anyone who's already familiar with literature. The goal is to give people some kind of background into understanding where you've seen a lot of presentations about Lattice Crypto and so on already today, but to give an understanding of where these side channel attacks might come from, what the state of the art is in defending against them, and from the point of view of cryptographic module implementers, just to point you in the direction of where the research is that you'd want to consider if you're going to be writing an implementation for a cryptographic module that's obviously going to need to be side channel resistant. So I won't go into why quantum safe crypto. I think if you've been in this room today, you've heard many explanations of why quantum safe crypto. I'm going to assume you're in favor of quantum safe crypto. There's a number of different flavors of quantum safe crypto, but my focus is going to be on lattice-based quantum safe crypto because that's very promising in terms of having a nice combination of relatively small keys, not small as ECC, but not huge like MaxLease, and nice performance that's comparable to the best algorithms that we use at the moment. So what I'm going to do is first of all go through some of the standard lattice-based algorithms, illustrating how they work, both encryption / key exchange and signature. Then I'm going to do a quick survey of side channel results that have been presented against those algorithms over the last years, and finally talk about existing quantum countermeasures in the literature. So the first one is learning with errors, and if you can read this and do matrix multiplication in your head, then you can see that this actually works out. So this is yet another way of presenting learning with errors. What we have here is we have one random matrix mod Q. Alice picks something small and multiplies it by the large random matrix, the arbitrary size random matrix, and adds on something else small and she gets that. Bob picks something small and right multiplies it, adds on something small, and he gets that. So here this yellow outline means that this is public. The blue outline means Bob knows it. The brick-colored outline means Alice knows it. Blue means it's kind of arbitrarily large mod Q, and green means that it's small. So what you can see over here on the right is... thank you very much. Mysterious trackpad. So what you can see over here on... Someone really wants me to get on with it. There isn't a laser pointer in here, and if I move away from the mic, it'll spoil things for the recording. So way over there on the... You know where the right is. Over on the right, you can see what I've done is I've highlighted those values in the resulting matrix that are close to each other. And you can see they aren't very close to each other. Those two matrices look random when you compare them to each other. And that's kind of the insight of learning with errors, that something small times something large plus something small, something small in secret times something large in public plus something small in secret hides those two secret things, those two small secret things. But then the magic happens in the next step. Alice sends her public large thing to Bob. Bob sends his public large thing to Alice. And Alice again left multiplies with her small thing. Bob right multiplies with his small thing. And now you can see that they come out with two matrices that are very close to each other. So I've highlighted in red the ones, the entries that are more than five different from each other. So, and note that this is being done mod 127, so there's wrapping mod 127. 122 isn't actually 121 away from 1, it's actually 6 away from 1. But you can see that almost all of these entries are very, very close to each other. And that's because the difference between these two is Alice's multiplicand times Bob's sum and the other way around. So the difference between these two is the difference between two products of very small things. So if they can do what's called reconciliation, if they can work out how much these things differ by, basically by taking the top bits plus some other clever stuff, then Alice and Bob can agree on a secret that's known only to them. So that's basically, I mean, there's plenty of other ways of presenting learning with errors, but that's basically what's going on. What we've got here is, and there it is expressed as an equation. So what we've got is your public values are n squared log q in size, and naively you've got n squared multiplications to do to implement this, because each the matrix operations are n by n. and for 128-bit post-quantum security, n is about 500 to 1,000. So this is nice, but obviously, as we've seen earlier, there are ways that you can reduce the size. So in ring learning with errors, for those of you, and this isn't exactly ring learning with errors, using the ring that's commonly used, I'm using the entry ring. In ring learning with errors, the observation is that if you get your large and small values by having each row of the matrix be a simple transformation of the one above. In this case, you just right shift, you do a circular right shift. In the case of ring learning with errors, the ring they use there, if you pop something off the right-hand side, then when it comes back on the left-hand side, its sign has changed. The things will still work, the math will still work through, but we're in the same situation. Small times large plus small gives you two matrices from Alice and Bob that appear random relative to each other. Then you multiply again by your small things, and you end up with these two matrices that are very similar to each other. So this is quite nice. We've got the same basic security properties, modulo any weaknesses that come through in the structure of the ring itself, and there's still a lot of research going on into that. But we've reduced the key size from n squared log q to n log q. Now, the number of multiplications stays at n squared, so we haven't sped things up significantly, but we have significantly reduced the key size. N squared down to n is a significant reduction. And so ntrue is another lattice-based scheme, and in this we're doing a very similar thing. Encryption is you take Alice's random thing, you multiply it by something small, you add something small. You may be able to see there that in this small matrix R, those numbers aren't plus and minus 1, they're plus and minus 7, and it'll become clear why when I go through it. So the thing that makes ntrue different from learning with errors is that it's not, this public value contains a trapdoor. So here we have, So Alice, she selects a small key, so over here on the left, sorry microphone. Alice has her small key, she finds its inverse, so you can see here, this times this over on the far right is equal to 1, that's equal to the identity matrix. and then she multiplies it by another small thing to get her public key H. So H is something small times the inverse of something small. So that's the additional assumption you've got in entry on top of learning with errors, that essentially inverting something mod Q looks random. That's the insight Jeff Hofstein had way back in 1995 that eventually led to the development of Ntrue. Given that trapdoor, so Bob has multiplied the public key by something small and added something small. So now when Alice multiplies back by her F, you can see that over on the right-hand side, all of those numbers are close to a multiple of 7. So if we multiply by F and then we reduce mod 7, we're going to get rid of the R times M, or the R times G term. What we're left with is F times M, and we can multiply by the inverse of F and recover M. So in the learning with errors case, it's basically a pure key exchange. The two parties pick secrets, and one party never learns the other party's secret. You just end up with something shared in secret. In the Ntrue case, it's a true encryption algorithm. One side can select the exact data that's going to be received by the other side and transmit it that way. There are also signatures based on lattices. So in some old lattice-based signature schemes, I'm not saying Ntrue sign here on the slide, but the first signature schemes that the Ntrue team came up with, they were vulnerable to transcripts, which basically meant that you leaked the private key through a transcript of signatures. So what we're seeing there is those dots represent the lattice defined by the private key, and you're leaking one of the fundamental cells inside the lattice that gives away the private key. So Vadim Lubashevsky came up with this idea that rather than just signing and leaking information, what you should do is, after you've signed, you review the signature and you see if you're generating signatures that come from a previously known distribution. Because if the distribution of the signatures is known and it's known to be independent of the private key, then by definition you aren't leaking information. So the modern paradigm for lattice-based signatures is, first you draw randomness and you select a starting point for the signature generation, then you do a signature generation operation using the private key, and then you reject depending on whether or not you're falling inside that known distribution. So you reject with some probability based on the properties of the candidate signature. So Lubashevsky's come up with a number of refinements of his idea. This is a fairly simple presentation of it. The current candidate is known as Bliss. It looks a lot scarier than this, but it's this basic idea that we have two very small amounts that we S1 and S2 that are long-lived, and we commit to them with this public key, which is A1 S1 plus A2 S2, where A1 and A2 are public. So it won't surprise you to see that hides what S1 and S2 are. And then we select small Y1 and Y2, multiply them by these public A1s and A2s, and you can see this calculated F as a hash, and we will come out with something where FS1 times A and Y1 times A I'm not explaining this very well, but basically, if you have correctly picked these small things, then there will be agreement on what Z1 and Z2 are, and F will be correctly recovered at the end. So it's this kind of Schnorr-like paradigm, but it's got this select and reject part to it, which is very good because it protects against information leaked from the transcript, but it's obviously potentially a concern because it means that signing is variable time. PQ Ntrue sign is one from the Ntrue team that's fairly similar. You start with a randomly chosen point in space, and you can use your private key to move from that point in space to a lattice point that is identical to the hash of the message mod p. And that point in space has the property that it's entirely defined mod Q. If a forger tries to forge the message, then they won't be able to create a signature that falls within the mod Q box. They'll be able to create one that falls within the mod P times Q box, but that's not going to pass the verification criteria. So again, we have this thing where we start with a random point, we do something with the private key, and then we reject. So that's a kind of quick romp through everything that's going on in Lattice-based crypto at the moment. So where might we leak side-channel information? Through multiplication, and there's different ways that you can do multiplication, coefficient-based, or what's called index-based. And in all of these algorithms, you do some multiplication that depends on private information. So if there's timing variation, that could leak what that private information is. And also in the signature schemes, and in fact in the encryption schemes or key exchange, you do sampling. So in the case of ring learning with errors, you pick your two small values, and those are picked from a particular distribution, and it could be that that sampling process itself will leak information. So there's three different types of sampling that happen: uniform, fixed weight, and Gaussian. Uniform means you're just sampling randomly from within a range mod some integer. Fixed weight means I'm going to have this many plus ones, this many minus ones. Gaussian means you've got a Gaussian distribution. You may also have side channel leakage from the number of rejections, and of course there's false attacks. What I'm showing over here is for index-based multiplication. This is research that hasn't been published, but for Entru, we pick the keys to be very thin. So you can store a key as a polynomial with ones and zeros, or you can say, here's a list of indices where the coefficients are one, here's a list of indices where the coefficients are minus one, and I'm not going to bother storing the ones where it's zero. If you do that, then you can actually naively, I think I had it on this slide, you can, by only storing these D positions, then using index-based multiplication, you can do entry operations in n times d adds rather than n squared multiplications. And d is going to be typically considerably less than n. It can't be as much as n by definition because it's all the ones and minus ones, and you leave out the zeros. So that provides a nice way of speeding it up. Unfortunately, as this slide shows, that it's very hard to make that constant time. Dan Bernstein was one of the people who kind of popularized the notion that a good way to think about constant time implementations is whether or not you can demonstrate that there's information flow from private information to operations that can be observed. And in this case, there clearly is. These are two different keys. You're using index-based multiplications. The distribution of the timing is clearly different. Does that leak information? It's not clear what information it leaks, but it clearly violates the principle that you shouldn't have different secret information affecting what the timing is. So as far as sampling goes, you can do uniform sampling, and that's very easy to do in a constant time way. You can do fixed weight sampling, where you have plus ones and minus ones, and you can have Gaussian sampling. This is very widely used. It's easy to construct security proofs when you're using Gaussian sampling. It's harder to do when you have smaller, thinner polynomials. So Gaussian sampling is widely used in academic papers. It's difficult to implement in a constant time way. You can implement it with floating point arithmetic or lookup tables. Floating point, you have issues with accuracy. Lookup tables, you have issues with size. So some examples, and I appreciate I'm running into the buffers when it comes to time. RSA signing false attack, this isn't quantum safe, but just everyone's familiar with this. If you cause a fault at the time of signing with RSA using Chinese remainder theorem, then that leaks the private key, because one calculation is correct, mod P, the calculation mod Q is incorrect, and so you can recover the mod P part of the private key. For Entru Encrypt, in order to make it adaptive chosen ciphertext secure, we have this mechanism where you can you you hash the one of the partway products of the encryption mechanism, and you use that to obtain another value that's used in encryption. So what you're doing is this is the sampling to get something that's fixed weight. And it turns out that sampling to get something fixed weight in a constant time way is very hard. If you do it efficiently, then that's not constant time. And so this is CTRSA 2007. It turns out that in order to avoid timing leakage, that would leak the plain text, that would actually leak the private key, you need to run your random number generator for about twice as long as you would have expected. There's been a nice cache attack on Bliss that was published in 2006. If Gaussian sampling is implemented by table lookup, then as you'd expect, cache misses happen, and that allows you to recover the private key with a certain number of observations. It does say the attack requires significant power over the device, but attacks only get better. Another attack on loop abort faults. So this is where you're inducing faults in the lattice-based signature schemes. And again, it's a strong attack model. You need to have control over the PRNG output, but it does demonstrate that you can potentially recover the private key with only a few or even a single faulty signature. And then there's another generalized side channel attack against Bliss. This is too small to read, but they make very strong claims about being able to recover. And the interesting thing about this is that it's based on rejection rates. So there is a case where the thing that's supposed to make you secure, in fact, is leaking information. So briefly talking about the countermeasures then, one obvious countermeasure is constant time algorithms, no conditional branches, and there's been good research done. I think the Entry Prime paper from the PQ Crypto project is the first one I'm aware of that really worked on constant time multiplications for lattice-based operations. So you can implement those in a fairly constant time way. It's not as fast as the index-based multiplication, but it is much safer in terms of side channel. Obviously, avoid large secret non-constant time lookup tables. These are particularly likely to be used in the case of Gaussian sampling, and so there's a lot of very interesting research going on at the moment from a number of different organizations looking at Gaussian sampling over the integers in a way that can be done constant time. Yeah, and just to show how recent this is, that paper's March 21st, 2017. That paper from Queen's University Belfast, I think it's also 2017. So there's a rapidly evolving field. Finally, if you're looking at multiplication, the best way to implement multiplication is to break up your polynomials using caret, suba, and tum. These are fairly well understood mechanisms, and they result in very efficient implementations that are constant time. So the thought to leave you with is, so this is all very well, but when am I going to have to implement it? When is this going to matter? One interesting thing, and this isn't in the FITS 140 documentation, but it is on the NIST post-quantum crypto project page, is that NIST has effectively said that you can run a FITS 140 module in FITS 140 approved mode and run something quantum safe inside it, so you're doing it in hybrid mode. It's like you do the approved algorithm and the quantum safe algorithm in parallel. Ordinarily, when you run things in approved mode, you can't run any non-approved security functions in them, but this statement and other correspondence that I've had with this make it clear that the intent is to allow this. So in principle, if your target is FIPS approval, you could be working today on a cryptographic module that implements quantum safe algorithms. And so hopefully this kind of information will be of use to you if you're in that situation. Okay, thanks very much.
I'd like to thank Mr. White. For the sake of time, if you have additional questions, please find them after the session. Let's see. I think there might be one of those. So just a quick announcement. There's a welcome reception right after this at the Hemingway Ballroom. So feel free to make your way out there after the session. I think it's just a meet and greet. So. Thank you.